Welcome to the Maria Heller Show, the Internet's original podcast. Since the year 2000, always ahead of the curve, always on your side. A true warrior for truth and justice, Maria and her guests leave nothing out, and no one is off limits. There is only one truth, the rest is lies. Sit back, enjoy the education with a true daughter of Mother Earth. Sharp New York wit, spiritual knowing, and a very dry sense of humor, Maria will dissect the news and lies to make it all palatable. Education is power. Maria delivers rapid-fire truth like no one else can. Here she is, the mouth that roars, the legendary Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria, you're alive and kicking. Welcome to the show. Today I have a special guest, someone that you guys love when he interviews me, so I figured it was time to turn the tables. So I have with me Richie Allen out of the UK. Richie's website is richieallenshow.com. There's a live link here. And I'm really happy to have Richie on the show with me. Good morning, Richie.
Hey, good morning, Maria, and thanks very much for asking me. It's a real pleasure, and I mean that sincerely. I'm thrilled that somebody I have so much respect and admiration for, the lady who put the first podcast in the alternative arena out there to begin with, that you've invited me on. So thanks for asking me. I'm chuffed. That's a great English word, that chuffed. Chuffed to be.
Chuffed.
Well,
I'm glad, but you know what? I've been on a lot of other people's shows, and you are an excellent host. And, you know, sometimes I don't even want to go on other people's shows because I know how bad their shows are. So I want to give you kudo for, you know, kicking out. I mean, what are you at, 10 months now of doing your show?
10 months doing this, yeah. I mean, I've got a long history in commercial radio and the mainstream media, but this, it was born out of the people's voice. And that not working in London, and David Icke just basically saying to me, why don't you make a radio program, and I'm sure we can get some commercial radio stations in Europe to play it. And right, and we were lucky enough that some you know, pretty big commercial stations in Europe play it live every evening here in the UK, and of course it goes out on David's website. But no, it's brilliant. All I do, Maria, is follow in the footsteps of pioneers, basically. You know, people like David, people like Jim Mars, Jim Fetzer, yourself, and I mean yourself, and I just basically report on what you guys do and say, which is important in its own way, but I'm not really doing, I'm not out there digging and unearthing facts on a daily basis. I mean, I do my research, but what I'm trying to do is to just provide just one more platform for researchers and speakers like yourself and others, and that's what I love doing. I love getting people on like you, asking a reasonably intelligent question, and then just letting you go. Mm-hmm. And that's what I love doing, you know.
Well, and you do a really good job of it, and I have to say, your audience is just wonderful. They've been very, very nice to me, very complimentary.
Well, most of them are your audience anyway. This is the beauty of this business, you know. Many of the listeners to shows like mine, they know all about the Maria Heller Show, so that's no big surprise. But thanks very much for the kind words. It's been some crazy day today. It's I'm obviously a good few hours ahead of you in the UK. You're on Mountain Time or Pacific Time. I can't remember the time you're on.
Pacific now.
I should know by heart now. Because I've had the show so many times. But it's a crazy time, Maria. Just as we talk now, the mainstream media is full of stories that the Greek government are about to do a two-year deal with the European Central Bank and the IMF to bail the Greeks out for 2 years. And as I'm chatting away to you, and as I was waiting for your call, my heart is breaking for Greek men, women, and children, Maria, because while you know all about it, of course, and your listeners will know all about it, these people really don't have a clue what's going on, who's running the show, who's pulling the strings, and they just get pulled further and further into never-ending debt slavery. That's something I'll be getting into in the coming days, of course. It's a big, big story here, and I know you're all over it as well. So much to talk about today.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, years ago when I was covering, you know, the IMF, you know, whatever country it was going into, as soon as anybody makes a deal with the IMF, they might as well know that they're making a deal with the devil, because they just go in and steal everything and own you.
Yeah, it's incredible, Maria. And, you know, I think the last time you and I were talking, we were talking about how they basically plant their Oh, I don't want to say they're slaves. Slaves is probably a bad word, but they're minions. I mean, we look at Ukraine at the moment. Their finance minister is a Chicago woman, an Illinois woman called Natalie Jaresko. You know, their prime minister, a guy called Arseniy Yatsenyuk, he's been talking about selling assets, state assets belonging to the Ukrainian people, to the United States of America. We see the same thing in Greece. You know, you summed it up. What the IMF, what the ECB, the European Union, the Troika, all of these things, what they do is they plunge these countries into a debt that never existed to begin with. And then when they can't pay it, they brutalize the people in that country in order to get the real wealth of those countries, namely the, how many times have you said it, how many times have we said it, namely the transport, the railways, the power companies, the water companies, my God. I mean, you're talking about water. One of the things I wanted to ask you today about was water in California and Las Vegas and Nestle and droughts there and everything like that. It's so obvious to people. It should be so obvious to people now. So it's about the destruction of natural life and the way we live our natural life. And it's the transferring of every last bit of wealth on the planet to a handful of people. It's not even 1%, as you well know. It's more like a couple of hundred people. And what's behind that is so terrifying that, you know, most people don't even want to consider it. It's scary times, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, how many times does David post that we're basically moving into Hunger Games? You know, you look at the world, you know, between the transhumanist and... you know, you get the CEO of Nestle Water who says that water is not a human right. And now that they've drained California, they're moving up to Oregon to suck the water out of Oregon. I mean, greed has no limit on this planet.
No, and the California thing, I have a young reporter who's just starting out, a girl called Meredith, and she's pretty smart. She's never really done any media before, and she's in Pasadena, Maria, and she does a couple of reports for me a week. Basically, she uses her smartphone. This is the beauty of all the technology. While the corporations are, you know, making billions and billions and tying us to all this technology, it's also the technology that's going to enable us to beat them. Because, you know, everybody can be a journalist now using a smartphone. You know, you can make a quick report and upload it onto your page or whatever. And Meredith's been talking a lot about that water situation in California. And it staggers me, Maria, although I know exactly what the mainstream media is and who it's owned by. It's owned by the same companies you just mentioned a minute ago. But that, with that situation, when Californians find out that several hundred gallons, I don't know what it is, you might have the figure, 600 or 700 gallons per dollar is sold to companies like Nestle, they should be marching in the streets with pitchforks.
I agree.
In California.
I agree.
What the hell is that?
Well, you know, I don't understand what's happened to California. You know, having grown up in New York City, you know, two places that we could always count on to be progressive was New York and California. But even with, you know, the same old tired governor, Jerry Brown, back in office, I'm not seeing anything progressive come out of California. They're not only losing their water rights, they've lost their right to choose whether or not to vaccinate their children. And I just keep looking at California and saying, what happened? You know, these people should be out in the streets like maniacs, but I'm not seeing that.
No, and even though there's been quite a lot of opposition to the SB 277 bill, as well as there should be, again, the sort of thing that you would imagine people screaming from the rooftops, rallying their neighbors to fight against it. The state saying to you, you know, we're going to stick an injection, a needle into your child, whether you like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, because you're so experienced at watching these people and the way they operate, you know that one of the repercussions or one of the implications for that, Maria, is children being taken away from their families and sent into adoption, which is, you know, another form of child trafficking. Because they're going to hang that over people's heads. They're doing it here in Britain. I speak to women on my show regularly who have faced the social services at their front door because their doctor, their GP has told social services that woman or that man or that couple have decided that they don't want to vaccinate their children. Imagine now, imagine a reality whereby a stranger can turn up and knock at your door and say, we don't like the fact that you're disagreeing with your doctor about vaccinations. You should know that you're harming your child. You could be causing future harm to your child. Therefore, we're considering maybe taking your child and placing it in foster care. And I know this is a big thing in the United States as well.
Here in the United States, not only does that happen, but now if you have your own children that are old enough to play outside on their own, they now call that free-range parenting, and the parents end up losing their children for months to the system because their kids were outside playing, even one boy who was 11 years old playing in his own backyard.
I interviewed a lady recently. I'm not sure if she's from Wisconsin, but she made the national news in the United States. She came on the show, and she was one of those free-range parents, Maria. They came to her because her children walked home from a park, which is a couple of blocks away.
Right.
I mean, you and I are young. We've been on the radio doing our thing for a number of years, but we're young people. We're still young. But we can remember, you and I can remember, when your parents, you would go off walking the train tracks. You know, you would go off walking in the countryside. You would go walking into town
right.
by yourself. You know, when I was 7, 8, 9 years old,
absolutely.
We weren't abandoned, but we were just given that, you know, that kind of independence. And again, the idea that a school and working in conjunction with social services can basically say to you, you're a bad parent, we're going to take your child away. It's insane to me. And when I talk to my friends, I'm from Ireland originally, of course. I've not lived in Ireland for a number of years now. And some of them listen to my radio program, and they think I'm crazy, and they think that my guests are crazy. Until I show them absolute proof of it. I say, look, here's a woman who had her child taken away.
Mm-hmm.
I covered a story recently, Marie. I covered a story recently where a woman who had difficulties with depression a couple of years back and had spent some time in psychiatric care and had worked on that and had come out and is doing well and is working. She's in the aftermath of coming out of the psychiatric institution and getting better. Two children were born, and the two of them are in care now because the social services decided in the family court that because of her prior history of mental illness, there is a severe risk of emotional risk to those children, and you know, future emotional risk. We're in the realms now of that Steven Spielberg film with Tom Cruise, Minority Report.
Right.
You know, something might happen to those children in the future, so we're going to take them away from you. And people need to wake up to this, because this is absolutely true. This is not an isolated case. It's going on all the time. Your kids shouldn't be walking home. We're going to have them. Your children should have the vaccination. You don't want it. We're going to take your kids. All of this sort of stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Crazy.
Well, they also had, I forget which state it was here, where some kids were caught swimming in a creek, and the cops called it wild swimming and told them that that's what swimming pools are for. So you can't even swim in a creek or a river anymore without it being a crime. So
imagine it. And again, I think back to when we were children, you know,
right.
hanging out in barns. I mean, I grew up in Waterford City, but I was on the outskirts. We were just outside the city limits. There was just vast countryside, rural areas. You know, the amount of times when we were children in the summer holidays, Maria, we would sleep in a barn. We would sleep in a hayloft. You know, and our parents would know we were, you know, a mile away from home. We were out in the countryside and nothing ever happened to us, of course. And the following day we would come back. And we weren't 14, 15, 16. We were like 9, 10 years old then.
Right.
You know, the idea that in some way that was down to bad parenting. It wasn't. It was down to us being given a chance to enjoy our childhood. And to grow, you know, to grow up and to learn and to have that bit of independence. It is a nightmare. And of course, because none of these cases are ever covered in the mainstream media, they're not. Especially these cases here in Britain where women are having their children taken away for nothing. There's no mention of it. Therefore, most people think that it's crazy conspiracy theory.
Right.
You know, that's why you're dealing with. But then again, who am I telling?
Well, you know, I think back, you know, when I was a kid, you know, I had an older sister, she was 2 years older, and I remember when she was about 12, my mother trusted her to take me and my two younger sisters at night on the New York City subways to go all the way across Brooklyn to Coney Island to watch the fireworks, which weren't over till about 11 o'clock at night. And we had about a 4-block walk from the subway station back home. And my mother entrusted my sister to take all of us on the train. And that's what we did. Today, I would assume my mother would be spending life in prison.
Well, there's no doubt in my mind that today somebody would have reported the fact that you were, you know, together and that you were young. Somebody would have found out who your mum was, where your mother lived, and no doubt she would have gotten a knock on the door, at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
That's absolutely right. Something that, I have to be honest with you, until very recently, I didn't realise that it was going on. But then, you know, I am a bit naive from time to time. When I was thinking, wow, that's amazing that they're getting away with this, at the same time they're criminalising homelessness. I mean, you're a New York City girl. You know about people being told in New York City that not only can they not collect rainwater there, but also you cannot grow vegetables in your garden.
Right.
Even if it's your garden, if you own the deed to the bloody property, you can't grow vegetables. Where are these people getting their cojones, Maria, to be telling people what they can and can't do?
Well, you know what? It's not so much where do they get their cojones. What worries me is why people are just sitting back and taking it. You know, here the biggest deal the past 2 weeks, I'm sure you've been following, and I did want to ask you, you know, just how bad America looks from your side of the pond. When you look at this country, you must be saying, has everybody gone insane in the United States? But the big issue, right, but the big issue was, you know, gay marriage. Now, truthfully, who does that hurt? Who does that bother? And yet we have pretty much every GOP candidate for the presidency screaming about gay marriage. You know, one of them said he's going to call down fire from the heavens to burn us up. Okay. You look at all this, you look at all these women-hating, freedom-hating pigs that are running for office here. And I don't understand. I just don't understand. We have 59 million Americans, which is a big percentage. I think it's 26 or 29% that follow no religion. Okay. You have people, the public opinion on gay marriage is, you know, 50-something percent are for it. And yet, with 59 million non-believers, non-affiliated people in this country, we have nothing but religious, what I call the American Taliban, making our laws.
Yeah, and it's absolutely bizarre to me. I've been watching it with great interest. I understand today that certain counties within the great state of Texas, the crazy state of Texas, certain county registrars, and I may be using the wrong word now, in registrar, but officials who would officiate over marriages like that, they're basically saying that we're going to ignore the law, and there's all sorts of talk about the Confederate flag and all this sort of stuff. And I did hear a bit of I was going to say Bat Spit Crazy, Lindsey Graham, one of the craziest men that ever lived in.
I know.
You talk about politicians, politicians are easy to own, because you just got to give them enough money and they'll do whatever you want them to do. But there are genuine lunatics like Graham who just genuinely is absolutely crazy. He can talk about gay marriage, and without missing a beat, he can segue straight into, oh, by the way, we should also arm the Ukrainians.
Right.
While we're at it, we should arm, we should arm the Iraqi army, then we should arm these, and, you know, we should put a security force right on the borders of Iran and all this sort of stuff. Just completely crazy. And he's running for president.
Well, they're all crazy.
They're all crazy.
I don't know what level of crazy can possibly be surpassed by what I'm seeing. And I got to tell you, I'm in shock over it. I mean, I knew they were crazy, but not this crazy. You know, you got Donald Trump, who's been married and divorced 3 times, who said that, you know, he's worried about the sanctity of marriage. He was called out on that. You know, Rand Paul said if gay people get married, no one should be able to get married anymore. You know, I've seen stupid posts that, oh, now, you know, one county clerk said that she's going to marry her dog now. When I saw that post, I said, I feel sorry for the dog. I mean, they get these hot button issues to get everybody all excited, like the Confederate flag. And at the same time, Obama was handed his fast track for the TPP. And it's signed and it's done.
It's a huge distraction. You're 100% right. Now, of course, it does mean something to gay men and women. Because gay men and women, most of the gay men and women whom I know, and I have a great friend in Ireland who's gay, and one of my former managers when I first started out in radio is gay. And of course, what they want to do, Maria, is they want to be able to bequeath their possessions to their loved one, if anything should happen to them. It's basic rights like those that gay men and women want. You know, but the way it's sold, I mean, with the absolute disgusting Fox News and its sister station, it's sold to less intelligent folks in certain communities, bigoted people. It's sold to them like that gay people are going to be walking down the aisle in your local church, which is complete nonsense. Mm. It's not about that. You know, it's about rights, basic rights. I should be able to bequeath my property to my lover without worrying that when I'm dead that my family, because they don't agree with homosexuality, are going to be suing him and all of that nonsense or her. So that's what it's about. So it does mean something to gay people, and it is important. And I know you, you know, you're a great supporter of equal rights for everybody.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, Maria, it is a bloody distraction.
Of course.
It's a distraction from getting through TPP, from agreeing strategies, Britain agreeing strategies with its, America agreeing strategies with its NATO partners about what to do about Russia, what to do about ISIS. Of course, it's a massive distraction. It's a wonderful gift for the media to just spend nothing, time of nothing else other than gay marriage, gay marriage, gay marriage. In the meantime, you know, it's left to the independent media to talk about what's more important. What's going on in the Middle East, what's going on in Greece is vastly more important than marriage rights. But that being said, of course, it is very important for gay men and women, and I totally support that.
Right. Well, they should have, everybody should have equal rights. And, you know, I always said when people used to ask me, you know, do you think gay people should have the right to get married? I would always say the same thing. Why shouldn't they suffer like everybody else? I was talking to my sister who's going to be leading a gay pride parade in Florida in a month or so. And I called her after the announcement, and I said, hey, Rose, you can finally get married. She's like, I would never get married. She says, forget that. You know, to me, marriage is very antiquated, and I've always felt the same way, even though I have been married 3 times. Maybe that's why. But to me, it's like it's a business contract that traps you in a way that nothing else in your life is going to trap you. And for me personally, only my opinion, I don't want any married people out there getting all upset. I've always felt, probably as a teacher of the medicine wheel and being so connected to nature and the earth, that it's an unnatural state for human beings to be married to one person and limit their sexuality to one person for the rest of their life when bees get more of a selection than we do. That's my opinion.
I've been with my partner for nearly 13 years. We've been together. And we're not married. We got engaged some years ago, but more as a symbolic thing at the time than anything. But I can speak for myself, of course, and I can only repeat what she said about it. But monogamy is for us. You know, we're kind of soulmates. We're together.
Well, that's great, but I don't think it's for everybody.
Exactly right. It's not for everybody. And anybody who's got gay friends, particularly gay men will tell you that's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, I know gay men that have been together 25, 30 years, and they are absolutely unified as a couple, but they think the monogamy thing is ludicrous. And we often joke about that. But for me, I don't know, for me there's just something a bit special about it.
If you and your partner agree on that, that's great. But why do you have to have a legal contract to be with another person you want to be with? Because I don't know what it's like getting divorced where you live, But divorce in the United States is expensive, and it's one of the worst things you can possibly go through in a court of law. You know, easy to get in, hard to get out.
Yeah. I mean, divorce, I mean, you probably know this as an Irish, you're talking to an Irish guy, divorce is legal in Ireland, but it's only been legal for about 10 years. Before that, people got separated, but they didn't get divorced because there was still no total separation of church and state in Ireland. In Britain, it's exactly the same as the United States. You know, divorce has been around forever. And to the best of my knowledge, Marina, it's pretty expensive here as well.
Well, it's not just expensive. There's so much bullshit that goes into it. So much uncovering, so much lack of privacy, so much ugly feeling, so much nastiness that, you know, you got to think, you know. And in the United States, by the way, now we have a new thing, Richie. They call your first marriage your starter marriage. Back in my day when I was younger, when you bought your first house, it was called your starter house because everybody could only afford a small little house, and then you'd kind of trump up as you went along. But now they have starter marriages.
That's fantastic.
And here we have, you know, I think our divorce rate now has got to be 55%. And you still have these religious fanatics talking about the sanctity of marriage. And where's the sanctity? Adultery is also against their religious beliefs. Imagine what would happen if they all got convicted on adultery.
Oh, well, listen, there's no greater hypocrite than he or she who stands behind the pulpit. I mean, especially where I come from in the Republic of Ireland, I mean, you're no greater hypocrite. I mean, you will remember, of course, the great televangelist scandals of the 1980s and 1990s. Mm-hmm. Swaggart and all these guys who were all found to have 15 and 20 mistresses.
Right.
These were the guys, you know, screaming about profanities and screaming about perversions and, you know, as you said, the sanctity of marriage. These guys were the biggest offenders.
Absolutely.
No bigger hypocrite than the religious people. No bigger hypocrite.
I totally agree. Listen, I knew when I was a younger girl, I used to just say, religion is a have for the have-nots.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
And I was driving with one of my friends through my town with it. God, there's got to be a church, Richie, on every two blocks in this town. And I said to him, you know, you can tell how poor an area is by how many churches there are.
Isn't that incredible, isn't it, when you think about it? Mm-hmm. I've read that about the South more than where you are now. I know you're in Arizona, but I've read that about the amount of churches, the situation where you have these towns. I've read and read and read. I've traveled in the U.S., but only in New York and in Florida. I've never been anywhere near the southern states, but
don't bother.
Don't bother. You won't be getting a Christmas card from the American Tourism Board this year, Marie.
Oh, too bad. Listen, when I was about 17 or 18, I had to travel all the way from New York into Virginia, okay? And I really never thought of Virginia as being the South. You know, when I think of the South, I think of Mississippi, Alabama, you know, all those deliverance fiddle-playing states. That's how I looked at it as a kid. But when I got into Virginia, I was so surprised at the racism, because that didn't exist where I was. And the racism, the ignorance, and the fact they were still bragging about the Civil War like they won the war.
Like
that
in it.
I was on another planet, and I just looked at them and told these people, I said, you do realize you lost the war. I said, now why we wanted the South, I can't figure out. And I was 17 when I said that. Well, you know, all these years later, when I look at the ignorance coming out of Alabama, Mississippi, you know, all these southern states, nothing of my opinion has changed. You know, they're going to allow the Ku Klux Klan to have a march on Washington about the Confederate flag. What in the heck? You know, what century is this?
It's absolutely crazy. It's, well, just listening to that, it's so funny because I see some of these posts on social media, you know, about the Civil War, and it makes me laugh, you know. I the ignorance, and it's nothing to do with intelligence. It's just absolute blind and willful ignorance and the refusal on behalf of people to actually educate themselves about who they really are, where they came from, and madness, Maria. Just It's an absolute panic. And don't think for a minute this is unique to the United States. You said this to me earlier on in this conversation. You said, Rich, you must be sitting there looking at the United States with you know, almost like with my mouse on the floor. Maria, just as bad here. You can see what's going on in England.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy.
But at least least you guys got 250,000 people to get out in London and march against austerity. You know, to get 250,000 people together in this country is almost a physical impossibility.
Let me ask you a question on that.
Mm-hmm.
On the 250,000, as you said, who marched to London to protest this tyranny that goes on here. Do you think that when you get a number as big as that, that the best thing they could really do is actually not come home?
What do you mean not?
Stay there.
What do you mean?
Stay there.
You mean
basically stay there, as in occupy but not go home. Basically, say, right, we're 250,000.
Right.
We're not going to return to our homes.
Yeah, but
until you guys submit your resignation slips and get out of that building and give it back to us, the people. What do you think?
Well, I think that would be a good idea, but look what happened to the Occupy movement in the United States. It was immediately infiltrated by government forces.
Yeah.
So, you know, that whole thing fizzled out.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I just think, to me, my opinion is still the same. I've been saying this for so many years. I'm bored hearing me say it. The only thing I believe would change things is a general strike. If you gave people a month to prepare for a general strike, get your food in your house, get your needs met, fill your cars up with gas, make a plan not to go to work, not to do anything. Think about if all the peons, which you and I are part of, none of us went to work, how would the rich survive? They don't even want to clean their own septic tank. How would they survive? They don't know how to do anything except bleed us dry. So if we all just went on a general strike, a week, 2 weeks, we could bring the whole system down. Nobody spend $1 on a corporate product.
And this is the classic Gandhi idea, isn't it, of civil disobedience?
Well, you know, when I interviewed Howard Zinn, and he was such a great man, he said that sometimes civil disobedience is called for. And God, that guy was still getting arrested well into his 70s and 80s.
Absolutely right. That's what it is. You know, we're seeing it in Ireland. We're seeing a little bit of a movement starting in the Republic of Ireland now with the anti-Irish water protest. Mm. You know, the Irish government set up something called a semi-state body, which means it's the utility service owned by the government and by the people. And the real reason they set it up, of course, was because they want to eventually sell it and then give the money to whichever corporation European Central Bank orders them to give it to.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, what Irish Water basically is, it's a third form of taxation on Irish water. Irish people already pay for the water twice.
Hmm.
They brought in this Irish water thing. You've probably been following this. And in the last couple of years, they've had these guys going around from community to community installing these meters. And there's been a very, very big resistance to it. And whenever there's a call to action in Dublin, usually 200,000 to 300,000 people turn up to say, again, you know, we're standing up against this. And that's pretty extraordinary when you think that the population of Ireland is just over 4 million people. So there's an enormous grassroots movement taking place in Ireland where the Irish are sick of it, because Ireland, Maria, is only about two steps away from Greece,
mm-hmm,
in terms of abject poverty.
Right.
You know, the Greece, 60% unemployment there amongst the under 25s.
Crazy.
60%.
I know.
Don't have a job. You know the way it is. And the Irish people are looking at this going, this debt slavery enforced by central banks who never had any money and didn't really give us any money, this is going to destroy us the way it's destroying Greece. And you're just about seeing a movement that's just about gathering pace in the Republic of Ireland now, and that's one to watch closely, I think.
Well, that's good. I guess that's where they get their name, the Fighting Irish, from.
Well, it's about bloody time, Maria, because for years we've just been bending over,
right,
and taking it where the sun doesn't shine. And I've been wondering about the Fighting Irish. Where are they gone? You know, the greatest rebels in history. What's happened to us? I've not lived at home for over 12 years. And but we're starting to see a big emergence there and a big movement there. And, you know, it's pretty exciting, that.
Absolutely. Like to see the same thing here. That would be great. Richie, we're going to take a short break. Stay with us. Richie Allen and I will be right back.
She's been called Paula Revere, the mother of the internet and even a legend. The mouth that roars all truth without any input from corporate, religious, or political affiliations. Leah's in it just like you are. Often imitated but never duplicated. Commercial-free talk providing a real education in a world filled with lies, cover-ups, and propaganda. Subscribe now and encourage your friends to do the same. Feel good about supporting real media that supports you and all life on this planet. Pick a subscription of your choice and get started on the journey down the rabbit hole. If you are financially challenged or a senior on a limited income, please send an email to maria@maria.net and she will work something out for you. There's never been a more dangerous or exciting time to be alive. Education is a necessity now. Stay informed. Subscribe today at www.meria.net.
Welcome back. Maria here, talking with my guest, Richie Allen. If you're not familiar with Richie's show, what are you waiting for? He's on YouTube. He's everywhere. And a couple of them actually have me in them, too. But get over to RichieAllenShow.com. I'll put a live link here. Support the people who are busting their butts to give you the information you need, or we're all going to be living in a horror movie, I predict, within the next 10 years. By the way, I wanted to let my listeners know, I almost forgot, next month, I actually can't believe it myself, will be starting my 16th year podcasting on the net. And it was something I said I would try for a couple of months. Well, I guess I should have been a little more clear on how long that couple of months would be.
Fantastic.
Richie,
that's a fantastic achievement, Maria.
I know, but you know what? I just did it. I was coming off terrestrial radio. I met this young man putting together radio on the internet, and I said, radio? Nobody even has speakers, you know? In those days, your computers didn't even have speakers.
Yeah, and he
said, are you any good? And I was breaking records at the radio station I was at, which, by the way, Jack Blood was my producer of. That's how I met Jack. And when I moved over to the internet, I said to this kid, we had a jimmy up, Richie, you would have just laughed so hard. We had a jimmy up so many different pieces of computers and peripherals to try to make radio over the internet in 2000.
It's not that long ago. I mean, it's a long time to be doing the program, but
I know. I never would have.
21st century, yeah.
I guess it was
changed.
Right. Now it's so much easier, but what a nightmare it was back in the day. And truthfully, a lot of people still didn't have speakers on their computers. Speakers certainly weren't built in. You know what I mean?
No.
So when my first show aired, I think I had 15 people that listened, and he told me I had a hit. Because I had 15 people, and I was like, wow, okay, but just very interesting and fun. Richie, I wanted to ask you something as a broadcaster and a person like myself. I got a note before the show from one of my really good listeners and said that his family is rejecting him and refusing to even talk to him because he keeps sharing what he learns on my show with everybody. Do you find that you get those same comments where people are actually ostracized from their family for questioning 9/11, questioning false flags, speaking out against the police state, et cetera, et cetera?
Yes, is the answer. Yeah, I hear it all the time. In fact, one of the things that I don't anymore now because I don't work Friday anymore, but I used to do a phone-in where I would throw the Skype open to anybody who would want to come on. And they would come on from various parts of the US and Britain. And one night, I was really struggling for subject, because you have to lead them as well, rather than just let people come on and
right.
Set the agenda. It's nice to set the agenda with a subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
And it's amazing your listener has said that to you, because I threw it out there. I said, I'd like to hear from our listeners how they were received in their family, by their family, and in their circle of friends, when they started to talk about their feelings about the information. And it was incredible, the amount of people we got in. We couldn't fit them into a 2-hour show. And they all told the same story. that they'd lost good friends, and tragically, Maria, tragically, some of them said that they'd lost contact with their dearest and closest relatives because their relatives were so shocked. In fact, one person said to me, his mother was so, not so much offended, but was so horrified by the things he was saying and the meetings he was attending, that she thought that he was getting involved in some sort of Jimmy Jones-esque cult.
Oh, my God.
He says he was in danger. And no matter what he said, you know, he said, well, no, there's no safety in danger. I meet with like-minded people who are just a bit fed up of the lies we're being told in the Daily News broadcast. His mum ended up, you know, she was very heavily into her religion, her Christian beliefs, and she eventually said to me, no, that he wasn't to come around anymore. And I asked him on the show, I said, is that still the case? Are you still not speaking to your mother? And he said, not for 3 years. And I said, that was the only thing. You had a very loving relationship before that. There was never any problems. And he said, no, we were as thick as thieves, my mother and me, he said. But she thinks I'm crazy.
But doesn't that remind you of several religions where if child or your partner falls away from the religion, they get disfellowshipped? You have to shun them. You have to make believe you never knew them, never met them. So if these people are raised by that same kind of mentality with religion, then I would think that, yeah, they're not going to want to talk about politics either.
That's right, yeah. A number of people have said to me before that their brother or their sister recommended that they go and talk to their priest. You know, go and talk to the priest, this is not right. They're saying, well, you know, I'm just not convinced that our politicians are being honest with us. I think there's a more sinister reality that we're faced with than the one being portrayed in the news. And it does. I mean, I'm lucky enough, my family's very small anyway. I think my family are kind of amused, Maria, by my relationship with David that's grown up in the last few years, particularly when we lived together in London. And they're more bemused by it. Nobody has said to me, and I've got a very tiny family, as I said, none of them have said to me, oh, you're absolutely, you're stark raving mad. They just kind of find it amusing, you know. But it could easily be the other way. They could easily be embarrassed by the fact that I do some work with David, that he, was instrumental in the radio show and all of that. They could be embarrassed by it and they could move away from it. But they don't. You know what they do? It's a typical Irish thing. They just pretend that it's not there.
Right. Listen, I have to pick and choose with some members of my family to never talk about what I know with them and just keep it on family business because they get their news from Fox News and think that they know it all. Or as David would say, they're not just willfully ignorant, they're arrogant about it.
Yeah, they are, yeah. And you see that with people. I had an incident in Manchester recently where I met a guy. There was actually a protest going on, and I went to meet somebody else. And I'm speaking to somebody, and somebody else recognized my voice. Doesn't happen very often at all, it really doesn't. Not in a city like this, it doesn't. But, oh, you're that guy. And he said, oh, you're the guy who used to call the reptilians and all the ancient bloodlines. And I never lose my cool at all, but I can be a bit sharp when I want to be. Isn't it interesting, I said, that of all the things that are discussed in my program,
right,
you decide to laugh at the discussion about the nature of reality. You don't want to talk about money as an energy source, where it comes from, the cabal that controls the central banks, none of that, because I said you can't easily ridicule that. You can ridicule, of course, I said, the ancient bloodlines and the ancient families. It's easy to mock that, but I said we can turn that around and we can mock the idea that a man gave his only son to be tortured to death and crucified over 3 days and then he rose from the dead and all of that. You hold that belief very sacred, but I can't mock that, even though it's no more or no less ludicrous than the idea that we are from ancient alien families.
Right.
What's ludicrous about that compared to the idea that a man gave his only son? And by the way, if you believe Catholicism, he didn't just give his only son, he gave himself. Because Jesus, God, and the Holy Spirit are supposed to be one in the bloody same.
Right. Exactly. Came down and...
You tend to walk away then, you know.
Well, you know, I mean, for people that don't want to believe in the reptilians, okay, and my own belief is they are certainly not the only non-human race inhabiting human bodies on this planet right now. They just seem to be, you know, at the top of the food chain. But, you know, people that believe in the Bible, and I'm assuming that's who you're talking to, they believe the biblical story of the Nephilim, which was supposedly half angel and half human and super giants that came down and
that's
had
right.
sex with women.
That's right.
So what's the difference between the Nephilim, for all we know, those could have been the original reptilians, and, you know, whether, you know, David talks about reptilians or not, and I've said this to people, you're going to discount all this guy's work because of that one issue? Just put that issue aside and read the rest of the work. You know, and I think it's just fear. It's programmed fear. Fear is permeating this entire planet right now. You know, I was looking, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about in the UK, I see you got a big story breaking with your Lord Janna, the pedophile, that they don't know whether or not they want to prosecute. And all I can think of is how many decades ago did David name all of them in his books?
Yeah, that's right, yeah, including Edward Heath, former British Prime Minister. When Heath was still alive, David called him out, and Leon Britton and others, and yeah. And you don't see too many of these, you know, these people who mock from the sidelines. You don't see too many of them having the balls, Maria, sorry for swearing, but they don't have the balls to say, well, you know, fair play now, the guy did, many years ago, basically write the script for what's playing out now in the media about these guys. But I tell you what, Maria, that story about Greville Janner, you know, here's a guy, and there is no risk whatsoever here now of you getting sued for libel. I would never, as a professional broadcaster, I would never put you in harm's way, or me, or anywhere else. Greville Janner is a paedophile. He just is. It's as simple as that.
Nice.
Scotland Yard detectives were disgusted when Alison Saunders, the Director of Public Prosecution, chose not to prosecute him because of his dementia. The cases of men who are still alive, thankfully, coming out of the woodwork to say that they were abused by Janner.
Right.
Not to mention that a member of Parliament, using parliamentary privilege, a guy called Simon Danchuk the other day, basically called him not only a raper of children, but a murderer.
Mm-hmm.
He walks amongst us, and he's got dementia, but yet he's able to sign into the House of Lords.
Right.
The house above the, you know, above the Parliament, and collecting £300 a day,
mm-hmm.
taxpayers' money, while he dodges and hides from prosecution. Oh, Maria.
I know. I've been following the story. I actually have that story for my listeners for Thursday's show. I did want to say, one of the other things I noticed this morning is you guys are getting the same bull crap we're getting here. Department of Homeland Security says we have to all be on hyper alert over the 4th of July weekend because we might have a terrorist attack. But at the same time, they said all Americans should attend every big event there is. So I figured maybe they want a big body count over their next false flag. But when I looked at the UK, I saw you guys now are scheduled for some drills right around the same time.
They're happening now. Today, there are drills happening today and tomorrow in London.
Uh-huh.
In fact, they've been covered by the news, so I don't think there's going to be any false flag event. There's massive drills going on right now today, simulating a lone wolf shooter, insert your own joke there, Maria, simulating a lone wolf shooter walking around London killing people. So they've been working on this today, scaring the bejesus out of people, because that's what they want to do. Create a permanent state of trauma and fear and panic. And you said to me on one of my shows, you've been on with me now a half dozen times, and please God, next week or the week after, you'll be back on with me again. You've said this martial law, they want to get people used to the idea
mm-hmm.
that eventually you're going to have armed,
nice.
Either super armed police or the army on your street 24/7.
Right. Exactly. Well, you know, we not only have the fear and the control, but, you know, here in the United States, when Janet Napolitano was in office, she came up with the stupid catchphrase, if you see something, say something. So we had lot of people snitching out their neighbors, reporting their neighbors' kids playing freestyle, All kinds of crazy things. You know, one guy who calls the cops and says there's a little black boy, he's playing with a gun. It looks like a toy gun, but you might want to check it out. 30 seconds is all it took for the cops to kill that kid with a toy gun. Because we're becoming a fearful nation of snitches. It's so much like Nazi Germany.
You know, it's McCarthyism all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it?
Yes.
You know, today, just before you called me up, I was just having a quick glimpse over the news just to make sure I was prepared for anything you might throw at me, Maria. And there was, yet again, the Education Secretary, the Minister for Education in Britain, is a woman called Nicky Morgan. And Maria, you know this, but some of your listeners won't know this. And I'm saying this now to Maria Heller's listeners. Listen to how mad things have gone. Nicky Morgan is telling teachers all across Britain today that they must rat out the children in their classrooms if they hear certain key words. They're to go straight to the head teacher and, if necessary, go to the local authority because those children might be being radicalised. This is the insanity of the country I'm living in right now. And do you know what's wonderful about this? What's wonderful is teachers, God love them. There's a massive resistance in this by teachers. Teachers are standing up to it.
Right.
They're saying, no, we're not going to do that. Why should we do that? We're not going to live in this Orwellian craziness where children can't speak for fear of us eavesdropping on them and telling tales. And you mm-hmm. know, I mean, children watch the bloody news. They watch the lies all the time.
Right. Well,
so it's possible a child could be talking about ISIS because they heard something on the news. Next thing before they know it, Maria, they're being asked questions by a policeman because the teacher reported on them. How crazy is that?
Well, but that's what they want, a total surveillance society. I'm sure you've read Huxley's book, Brave New World.
Indeed.
And, I mean, we're there. You know, we're there.
We're living it now.
Huh?
You're absolutely right. We're living it now.
Absolutely.
We're acting out our own dramatization of those books.
But, you know, the scary thing is we can never let go or forget about 9/11 because children that have been born after 9/11 don't know any different world.
Spot on. It's vital we never stop talking about it. And you know, it's funny you say that because you are the, I mean, you're a young woman and I'm not passionate like you are, but at the same time, you're like the grandmother of the independent media. You won't like being called a grandmother, but
I am a grandmother. I am a grandmother.
I should have said the godmother.
I like godmother.
Godmother is better, yeah, exactly. So, I bet you, you've been like me. I bet you there's been times when Maria Heller has thought, I'm talking about 9/11 tonight. Should I be? Am I talking about it too much? I tell you this, Maria Heller, we can never talk about it enough.
No, until the truth is out there and all the people
absolutely.
That created 9/11 are in jail or dead, we can't take our countries back. We can't get our freedoms back. That was the big excuse for this apocalyptic world we're living in right now.
That's right.
So when people tell me, oh, you're going to talk about 9/11, you know, isn't it time to move on? I say no, because we're living in the result of it.
Of course, and you said the most, probably the most powerful thing that anybody will say today on any news network or any broadcast anywhere. Our children will know nothing about it other than the lies they are told when they go to history class.
Mm-hmm.
It's as simple as that, because they weren't around. And they can watch all the David Icke documentaries and they can listen to all the Maria Heller broadcasts they want. It's no good. You know, as long as they're going to school and being told lies. So we have to never stop talking about it. Never. I mean, I bet Kevin Barrett is on you later on. And I know that Kevin will want to talk about Tunisia. But at the same time, you know, Kevin won't miss an opportunity to remind people.
Oh, yeah.
Look, as you said, Maria, you know, this is all a result of the fact that they got away with 9/11.
Absolutely. Well, Richie, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. This was great fun. We'll have to do it again.
It's been an absolute honour, really. You've no idea, and I wouldn't say that if I didn't mean it.
I know.
I'm nobody important. I just make a programme. I don't do interviews because, A, I don't really have, you know, I don't do the research that you do and others do. But, B, much of the independent media, they're not really serious, and they don't take it that seriously. But you're far from that. Your programme is an absolute joy to listen to, and it's been a joy to be honest, and I mean that sincerely.
Well, thank you, Richie. We'll talk again soon.
All Can't wait. Thanks, Maria.
Okay, bye. Richie Allen, check out his show, richieallenshow.com. I think he does a really good job. And, of course, thanks for supporting my show. So you've got to be picky and choosy because you never know who's a wolf in sheep's clothing out there anymore. But I can vouch for Richie. I think he does a great job. Anyway, I'll see you guys on Thursday when I'm back with Planet of the Apes news because it sure looks like that's what we're living. See you guys then.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.